going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers episode 44. If you hear purring, it is not me. It's this motherfucker right here, Ghost. He won't leave me alone. So I was like, you know what? I'll just put him on my fucking lap and maybe it'll make you guys feel nice and cozy and calm and loved and all that good stuff. Just to get you ready for today's short story, into the episode will be, what do we got today? We got a Twisted Reunion, When It Rains. It's raining pretty crazy today out here in California, so I thought that'd be a cool little story to do. Originally, I was thinking about sharing the first chapter of Ain't No Messiah, which my buddy Jeff Campbell just delivered. I put that up on YouTube if you want to check it out. I'm not going to share it today. I'm going to wait till we have a couple more of those, then I'll start sharing them every week. But yeah, super happy with his performance. He's a really good actor. I've watched him in our community theater. He's done Evil Dead. He's just a talented guy. He's also the illustrator for several of my books, Trying to Die in Brightside, Ain't No Messiah, which I love, and Untold Mayhem. So yeah, it's kind of cool to be able to work with him on that. I'm really loving what he's doing with the narration, so you guys can check that out on my YouTube channel if you like. What has been going on? Shit, actually a lot. I thought about recording last week in Vegas, but I didn't even take my gear. I realized it was just going to be all about family. Wasn't going to do much work. We didn't even see any friends out there. All we did was stay in the room, lined up a bunch of hookers and coke, and then just me, the wife, and kids, we just partied like crazy. Actually, that's not true. Only I did that. That's not true either. What we did was have a very, very nice family vacation. Got to check out, what did we do? Went hiking at Red Rock one day with the kids. We went and saw Potted Potter, which was hilarious. I didn't think I was going to really be into it. I've seen the Harry Potter movies because my daughter, and she's read the book so many times, huge fan. My son has seen a couple of them. My wife's read the books and watched the movies. But all of us were laughing like crazy. Yeah, I hadn't laughed that hard in a long time. So yeah, that was Potted Potter. It's these two guys that are trying to do all seven books in 70 minutes. But yeah, pretty hilarious. And we also saw Ka by Cirque du Soleil. That was awesome. I saw it before with my wife. We both loved it. But yeah, the kids were blown away by it. Had some really cool dinners, a lot of neat experiences, went to the Adventure Dome, played video games, all kinds of cool stuff. And from our room, we were able to look down and see the Bellagio water show. So my son loved that. Every time it would go on, he would go and watch it. So yeah, it was a very cool, relaxing trip. And what I realized too, like one of my favorite parts was just walking around with my family. We just had a lot of fun embarrassing my daughter. My son was dancing everywhere he went because of he would hear music and he just has to dance. So it's strange that I would have a boy like that because I'm nothing like that. But it's really cool and I always, yeah, I encourage it. I tell him I never want to see him stop dancing and having fun, just expressing himself. And if he gets beat up for it because of me, I'll feel really bad. But I don't think he will. What else did we do? Oh, had a very cool trip to Phoenix. I think I mentioned it last episode. I was going to go to Phoenix to see my buddy Michael Poorman, who is, I'm writing about him in my traumatic brain injury book. He's the one who has CTE symptoms, pretty severe, and it prevented him from getting more chemo to try to fight his acute myeloid leukemia. So he's lived longer than his initial prognosis, but he probably doesn't have a whole lot longer to go. When we got there, his wife told us, you know, that he was had a super compromised immune system. He just got some blood work back. He probably shouldn't have, you know, been going out and doing anything with us, but you know, he wanted to do it. And she said, you know, if he were to die with us, then he would be happy. Like, that's how he'd want to go. But being able to see that, experience that, it's pretty powerful. I've told him many times, like, how much I've learned from him. The way that he is approaching death, the way that he is dealing with it, is incredible. That's how I hope to do it. I hope to be that strong. But yeah, we went out and we did Top Golf, which was fun. I'd never golfed before in my life. I think I've been to the driving range one time. But it was nice. I didn't care that I was terrible at it. I just had fun. The next day we went out shooting, five guys with guns going into the desert, some of us with possible CT symptoms. Made me think of writing a story about it where things go bad, but everything was cool. It was fun. Michael's son went with us, and so he got to watch him shooting as well. But yeah, so that was a good time, and reconnecting with five of my other buddies that I played football with at Brown. Many of them I hadn't seen in 25 years. So it was really cool to reconnect with them. One of my friends talked to me about a book that he had in his head. Like, he's been developing it for the last 6 years, but hasn't really said about, like, he's written down notes and everything else. But I realized talking to him, I was like, oh yeah, I was like, you're never going to write this book because of this, this, and this. I said, unless you have someone like me that's going to help you push you. And so we talked about it for a couple hours, and he plotted out so much more. We were able to figure out exactly one of the things I was holding him back was, because either it's probably going to be like a 5-book series, a sci-fi series, but he wasn't sure, you know, perspective, who the main characters were. So after talking it over, I think we decided it'd be best to be first person, which I highly recommend, if it works for the book, but it seems to work for the book. And then he wants to have two characters each book. So it'll be two different people, alternating points of view, and then every book will be different. Sort of like my Messiah book, where every Messiah series, where every book is going to be a different main character. So it was fun developing that with them. And it was kind of nice because I always considered myself the dumb fuck from Brown. Like, all my friends gone on to, you know, they did Wall Street or businesses or law school, all very brilliant guys. Whereas I felt like I was always kind of the dumb shit, the one that didn't do anything with my degree, just a pothead, you know, all these ideas I have. So it was kind of nice to have a little bit of expertise in an area and be able to give them advice. And I also am trying to, with that buddy who's writing the sci-fi book, I was telling him, I was like, well, this would make for an awesome Try Not to Die as well. I said, so if I'm going to help you with, you know, developing your ideas, I was like, then I'd want first stab at writing a Try Not to Die set in your universe, which would be good for his book and good for my series. And also ran the idea of Try Not to Die past a couple of my other buddies. My buddy Tony, who owns a salvage yard, had a good talk with him. I don't know whether or not he really wants to write the book, but I already came up with a super cool one based off of all off of his yard and different stories he was telling me. I used to work at a recycling yard, so I have a little bit of that experience as well. But yeah, I already have like the whole idea plotted out. So that one would be a really cool one to write. And I was hitting up my buddy Tom about writing one about something going on in the desert where he lives. He lives in outside of Phoenix. He's a big gun guy, goes hunting a lot. So we might do something out that way. Maybe it'll be Wild West. I don't know. And who knows if it will develop, but my goal right now is to just put out as many of these little things as possible. Let's say only half of them actually develop into books. That's still cool. That means I'll have, you know, 10 to 15 of them in the next, 5 to 10 years. So, yeah, just plugging away on those. What else is going on? Got some really cool news. Put in for a BookBub ad last week. Well, actually, just a couple days ago. For Brightside, brand new cover. Fucking love this cover. This is a cover that I had originally wanted. It's kind of what I was always seeing. I just didn't do it. I got talked out of it, but now I got what I want. I think it looks good, and it helped me land the BookBub deal. For those of you that don't know, that's probably one of the absolute best places to get an ad as an independent author. The other times I've had one, the books have hit number one in their I think Twisted Reunion was on it before and hit number one in horror on Kindle. Brightside had it once before and hit number one in, I think, Suspense. So it definitely sells a lot of copies, gets a lot of new eyes on the book. And Yeah, so that should be pretty cool. If you haven't read Brightside, I definitely recommend checking it out. You can get it for free on older episodes and on, maybe not on this podcast, but on my earlier podcast, Unlocking, if that's even still available. But I also put Brightside out on SoundCloud. So all the chapters are there if you want to check that out, the audiobook. But yeah, that has 100+ reviews and a 4-star rating, so it's doing relatively well. Probably one of my stronger books. The other really cool thing about that is that ad is going to be, I think it's going to be on sale December 17th and 18th. And that's just in time for the pre-orders for Try Not to Die in Brightside. So anyone reading Brightside, if you enjoy Brightside, you're going to want to pick up Try Not to Die in Brightside. It extends the story a little bit. It's written from a 16-year-old girl's point of view that is stuck in Brightside. She's only been there, I think, 2 weeks. My friend Donna Gonzalez co-authored it. She helped turn that character into something much different than I had imagined. The girl is Becky. I think I only wrote maybe 2 or 3 lines about her in the book. Actually, it was a little bit more than that. And I don't want to give anything away. But the way she was described in the first book was she was kind of a frail 16-year-old girl. And, we didn't know much about her. But bringing Donna on board, Donna turned her into this 16-year-old girl who's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, which means that completely changed the character. Because someone who's a blue belt at that age has had a lot of experience. That experience would change their mindset, change their ability level. So it made her such a cooler character. And a more exciting book. So instead of more of a victim, she's more of, she's still a little bit of a victim, but way cooler book. You definitely want to check that out. Donna is actually narrating that audiobook now. She's a talented voice actress, so that's cool to have her doing that as well as the writing. So that'll be dropping soon. Pre-orders are going to be up now. And we should be running the contest relatively soon. The 21 Days of Death, or whatever we're going to call it. It's going to be up on YouTube and possibly Goodreads. I'm not sure. I might just have the audiobook contest version. And so it'll be where you have to, every day you're going to have to put in your vote on what the correct choice is for the end of that chapter. And then the person with the most correct votes will win. Still haven't decided big prize and all that shit, but I will let you guys know when I do. What else? And if you do want to, if you're interested in that kind of stuff and want to know when books are released and all that, probably the best way is to get on my mailing list. I don't send out newsletters very often, but when I have something big like a contest or a free book or something like that, I'll shoot something off. So you can just do that. You know what? I had the sign up on my website and I think it's fucking busted. I gotta fix it. So just listen to me and you'll be okay. Follow me on Amazon and all that good shit. What else is going on? Try Not to Die. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned it, but, and I think I didn't. If I didn't mention it yet, it's just because I don't want to get my hopes up too much. But we are in the process right now of, my buddy's writing up a business plan for Try Not to Die mobile escape room. My wife had the idea a couple years ago about doing a mobile escape room. I realized that'd be fucking awesome to do with Try Not to Die. So it'll be like a typical escape room where you have to solve a bunch of problems in order to get to the next level. But I'm also going to add in my storytelling and throw different scenarios at people, you know, in the middle of it. So maybe there's 10 different types of puzzles you got to figure out, but there's also 10 different instances where I come over the loudspeaker and I don't know, we'll have like a big screen TV and there could be all these dogs running at you and you have to decide which of these 3 weapons is the right one to use. If you guess wrong, you die. I wanted to use real dogs and real weapons, but my lawyer said that wouldn't be a good idea. Even if we had a really good waiver. So that makes it way fucking more boring, but I think it could still be pretty exciting. I did an escape, our whole family did an escape room with my brother Mike's family this weekend. The boys did, we did the Orient Express room, while the girls did, I think it was Houdini. And so We got to, we did a little race. Of course, we lost because we're men and we didn't ask for clues. And we're also not as bright. Although my brother Mike's a genius, so I was a little disappointed he didn't figure out everything. But yeah, so that was fun. I think the mobile escape room is going to be awesome. No better way to advertise than having a huge van going down the freeway that has Try Not to Die on the side of it. So I think that will do well. If that mobile escape room does well, we'll open some in different states. I think that'd be pretty cool to franchise those out and have that going on. So working on that. What else? Yeah, Untold Mayhem is about to go up for pre-order as well. All we're waiting on with that is the artwork. So I think the official release date on that is February 4th. But if you really want to check out a copy early, I don't think I'm going to do advanced copies on that one. It's not worth it to get the print advanced copies just because so many people don't leave reviews. People want free books. It costs a lot of money. I'd rather put that money into marketing. So I apologize, but you're probably not getting a free book from me this time. Sorry. You can order the pre-order now. And so both of those books are out. Last thing. Oh, I think before I mentioned that the whole family started training or was going to start training jiu-jitsu in a gi. I have not gone yet. Part of it is my neck's still all fucked up. I'm afraid of re-injuring it. I keep running into problems and having it kind of reset. Another part is I'm lazy. And the other part is it kind of sucks having to go train in a gi. I'm not sure whether or not I'm going to like it. But I've told myself, you know what? Any jiu-jitsu is good jiu-jitsu. It might be better for me. It's going to slow things down. So that is what I'm going to be doing this morning. I took my son last night to watch him train again. I was a little bit scared because he wasn't tapping to an arm bar. And he told me afterwards, he's like, well, it didn't hurt. I was like, dude, I said, it's not going to hurt until it fucking breaks. I was like, you're going to break your arm if not tapping. So there's a lot of stuff that I need to go over with him just for his safety and so he doesn't hurt anyone else. But that is something he's really excited about it. He's pumped about trying to learn. And so I think now would be a good time for me to get back involved. So I will be going to Gracie Baja this morning, checking that out. And then tomorrow I'll be going to Pasadena 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu for the no-gi. So I was like, if I could do a little bit of both, I think that would be ideal. So yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Just haven't been doing a lot of creative stuff. There are short stories I like to write. I still got so many different projects that I need to clean up. I'm going to jump back into Beyond Brightside as soon as I get that back from my editor. But she's been so busy cleaning up the final version of Try Not to Die in Brightside, Untold Mayhem, different, you know, various other things. So it might not be until the end of the year that I start that. And I'm also going to need to jump back into the Brain Book. Going on this trip made me realize that it had been 5 months that I have put it to the side. I've still obviously been, you know, I take my notes. I'm still working on my brain, improving my brain, talking to people. But I haven't been doing any interviews at all. I didn't do any writing at all because it was just, I was getting depressed. My wife suggested I give it a break. I realized I needed to give a break and that there was no rush in the writing of it. But going back and seeing Michael and seeing my friends, that restarted the process. So I need to jump back on that as well. But one of the super cool things is yesterday in therapy, I was talking to my therapist about everything that's going on, just how things are awesome, things with the family are awesome, things with writing are awesome. And he said, yeah, he's like, that's what's going to happen. He said, if you put the time into your family, if that comes first, if you're happy and fulfilled there, he said, the writing is just going to come to you. Everything else is going to improve and be better. And that is what I'm experiencing. So definitely in a good place right now. I think I'm ready for this holiday season. Even been practicing some guitar songs, so some Christmas melodies. They kind of suck right now, but a little bit more practice, I'll get okay at them. All right, guys. I have some work to do before I go get my ass choked out in a gi. So I will leave you now with When It Rains. This is narrated by T. Quillen from Twisted Reunion. If you haven't picked that up, please do so. But only if you like gross, disturbing, dark stories. Very twisted. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you have an incredible week. And hopefully I will see you next week. All right. Peace.
When It Rains. Dell followed his boss and two coworkers onto the covered balcony of the second floor and took the chair next to Taylor. It was the seat closest to the kitchen. If they wanted to get wet, that was fine with Dell, but he was staying by the door. This wasn't just a mild September shower, a little thunderstorm. On a night like this, there was no telling how much rain the town was going to get. Lightning flashed, illuminated the entire property.
"Holy crap,"
Martin said with his heavy Swiss accent. He pointed toward the rushing river some 20 yards away down the grassy slope.
"You see that water? Look at that. Amazing, no?"
Dell stretched his back, looked at the overflowing river, but kept his comments to himself. The torrential rains had transformed the usually quiet creek, upsetting the balance of things. Martin clearly wanted someone to agree with him, tell him it was a beautiful sight, but Dell figured he'd leave that to the other ass-kissers who'd say the grass was orange and pumpkins were green if their boss said it was so. Martin must have noticed Dell's indifference, because he was quick to ask,
"Does this happen all the time? The crazy weather like this?"
Taylor took a swig of his fruity drink. He looked like a clown with his flashy jewelry and trendy clothes. Maybe he fit in Hollywood, but if he ever ordered that in one of the local bars, he'd be laughed out of town. Taylor wiped his mouth and asked Dell,
"Yeah, what the hell's up with this place? It was nice as shit earlier today, all warm and sunny like L.A.
Dell was tempted to mention the gray clouds that had been on the horizon all afternoon, but thought better of it. Instead, he took a chug of his Bud Light and said, "The only difference was the lack of smog, huh? Remember just last week you couldn't stop raving about how great the clean air was?" Taylor didn't look away from the storm.
"Yeah, too bad the frickin' pollen count's sky high. I've never sneezed so much in my life."
"Seriously, Dell?"
Martin asked in his slightly mixed up English.
"The weather gets horrible all the time, no? Yes?"
"Over in Ashford and sometimes in heaven, they get downpours like this. But not so much down here. Every once in a while it'll come down real hard like this, but it's usually just quick showers."
Billy, who'd been unusually quiet most of the night, chuckled and polished off the rest of his Jack and Coke.
"Heaven. I can't believe you guys called a town heaven."
He hawked a wad of phlegm into his empty plastic cup and tossed it onto the floor a few inches from Taylor's feet.
"There's a goddamn church on every corner, and one in between them."
"And what the hell's up with not being able to get booze on Sundays?"
Taylor asked.
"Yeah, I thought the whole wine being blood bullshit made alcohol okay,"
Billy said, disgust dripping like the raindrops falling off the railing. Another lightning bolt lit up the sky. Dell inched his chair toward the kitchen just in case the next one found its way onto the balcony. People out here like to pray. Most of them got good reasons. Instead of letting it go, Billy continued.
"The whole God thing's bullshit, if you ask me."
Martin said,
"Maybe you shouldn't be so quick to say such things. Who do you think makes the rain?"
Billy pushed out of his seat and headed toward Dell, who scooted his chair out of the way as the muscle-bound bully stomped into the kitchen, mumbling under his breath. Taylor took a sip of his drink.
"What the fuck's that guy's problem?"
"Was he never an altar boy?"
Martin asked, seemingly surprised when everyone burst into laughter. Billy stumbled back onto the balcony, a fresh drink in his hand.
"What the hell's so funny?"
"It was nothing," Taylor said. "Just chill."
"This shit's miserable. You know how dirty the Escalade's gonna be tomorrow. We live on a goddamn dirt road."
Another burst of lightning exploded above them,
Taylor pointed to the driveway below.
You might want to move it, Billy. If the water keeps rising, you're going to need to get it detailed. I mean, your rims are going to be a mess.
Billy pulled the keys from his pocket and turned to Dell.
Go throw it in the garage for me.
I'm not going out there.
Were you afraid of a little rain?
No, I'm just not going out there.
Come on.
Billy took another drink.
Earn your keep, man. You don't pay rent.
Yeah, and neither do you. Plus, I'm only here during the week.
What if I turn on the outside lights for you? Maybe Taylor can hold your hand.
Dell wanted to tell Billy where he could go. Instead, he shook his head and sat back, stared out into the darkness.
Billy stuffed the keys back into his pocket.
Fine. No big deal.
He told the group, although his tone said it was.
I can afford to get it washed.
The storm picked up, the rain slapping against the side of the house. Martin got out of his chair and asked everyone to scoot over. For someone who claimed to be an outdoorsman, he sure didn't like to get wet.
It ain't gonna melt you none, Taylor said before quickly changing the subject. So guys, he said, are we gonna head out or what? I need to get laid.
You want to go now?
Dell asked. Taylor said, hell yeah. Tonight's college night down at Frank's. The chicks can't hold their booze.
There's nothing going on down anywhere, Dell said. Not in this weather. Stop being such a pussy, Billy said.
You go ahead and go out there. I ain't going.
Billy finished his drink and dropped his empty cup next to the first one.
The storm will be over in 10 minutes.
I bet my house it won't.
Shit. It ain't a house, Dell, if you can drive it over here and drop it off in my driveway.
Taylor snickered and then quickly told Billy,
that's not funny, dude.
You laughed.
I was thinking about something else. Don't pay any attention to him, Dell.
Dell cracked his thumb, pictured the gun in his nightstand drawer.
I never do.
Billy leaned forward in his chair and turned toward Dell.
What's your problem with me, country boy? You jealous, or what?
Dell was afraid of what he might say if he opened his mouth. Martin attempted to break the tension and suggested,
Now, fellas. Let's be quiet and enjoy this.
I'm gonna head in, Dell said as he rose from his chair.
Gotta get up early.
He reached for the kitchen door and was turning the knob when lightning flashed. Taylor yelled and nearly fell out of his chair.
What's your problem, Taylor?
Billy asked.
Did you guys see that?
Taylor stammered, pointing toward the river.
Holy shit, did you see it?
See what? Billy asked, sounding bored.
Look, look, down there in the shadows.
Dell peered into the darkness. He couldn't see anything, but he was afraid he knew what Taylor had seen. Straining to keep the fear from his voice, he asked,
What did it look like?
Leave the little girl alone, Billy said. He got spooked by a deer or some shit.
Taylor got to his feet and backed into the wall.
That was no deer. Keep looking down there. I'm not fucking around. Something's out there.
Martin was starting to say that he couldn't see anything when lightning struck again. No one said a word, but they all saw it. Billy got closer to the edge of the balcony and stared into the black of the backyard. Martin turned to Dell and asked him what in the hell that thing was.
A lurker, Dell said.
Suddenly, Dell became the center of attention. Bombarded with questions, Dell tried to explain without sounding scared.
I've never seen one before, but that's what it's got to be.
You knew about these things?
Billy shouted.
I told you these things were here, but y'all didn't listen to me. Never do.
Martin nearly shrieked.
What do we do? Who do we call?
It's all right, Dell said, trying to calm everyone down, including himself. Just leave it alone, and it'll leave us alone. Let's go inside. I don't think it likes to be watched. Billy returned to his chair.
Screw that. I'm going to sit right here and watch where it goes. I'm not letting it sneak around until it finds a way in the house. Hell no, I'm not.
Martin ran into the kitchen to get the phone. Dell told the other two,
I said you guys were crazy for living close to the river. No one with any sense has a house near the river.
Electricity ripped through the darkness. The yellowish creature, looking like a man-sized lump of Play-Doh covered in mud and algae, slowly climbed the embankment, the rising river at its feet.
It's getting closer, Taylor shouted. You didn't say shit about those things.
I said there were probably lurkers in the river. That's why I said not to go down there.
I thought it meant a fucking raccoon or skunk or some shit.
Yeah, Billy agreed. Or some crazy fish thing.
Martin ran back out onto the balcony, cell phone in his hand.
No signal.
Everyone else checked their own. Not a single bar. They went inside and found the landline was dead, too.
Storm must have knocked it out. Happens all the time, Dell said, even though he'd never had it go out.
God damn it.
Taylor stuffed his phone back into his pocket.
I always gotta go at least 10 feet from the house to make a call.
God damn it. Taylor stuffed his phone back into his pocket.
I always gotta go at least 10 feet from the house to make a call.
So go do it, Billy ordered.
Fuck you! You go do it!
Dell said,
It won't do no good nohow. Police won't do nothing.
Why the hell not? Taylor shouted. There's a monster down there!
Relax, Dell said.
They won't bother you as long as you don't bother them. Just stay inside.
Dell had no idea if this was true or not, but he'd heard it at the grocery store last week from two good old boys picking up a carton of chum.
Absolutely, Martin said. We stay inside.
And lock every door and window, Billy said.
Dell smiled, enjoying that the oh-so-smart city boys were finally paying heed to what he said.
Just to be safe, Dell said, and walked through the kitchen.
Where are you going?
Martin asked as a thunderclap shook the house.
To my room?
He could tell they were impressed by his couldn't-care-less attitude, and he wasn't about to blow it by telling them he was going for his Glock. If the stories were true, the lurker wouldn't go down easily. The good old boys said they'd seen one take 3 rounds in the chest and still get away. Dell paused to flip on the light before descending the staircase. He hurried down and headed for his room, disappointed at himself for being frightened. Nothing was in the house. The lurker could rummage around the river until it found a dog or a cat or some unfortunate creature, and then it would return to its home in the Caniton Caves. After entering his room and pulling his .357 out from under the mattress, Dell stretched out on his bed and waited. Listened to the raging storm. Twice he thought the loud bang outside his bedroom window might have been something other than thunder, but he reassured himself it was nothing but his nerves. Lurkers wouldn't try to get in a house, especially a locked one with 4 men inside. Dell studied the window, wondering if he should pull down the shade. He decided not to, figured he'd want to know if a monster was on the side of the glass. He wouldn't shoot it unless it attacked. But if it did, he was going to put a hole in that son of a bitch's head. Someone upstairs shouted. It sounded like Billy. A moment later, everyone yelled. Dell jumped off his bed and ran for the staircase. Bounding up the stairs 2 at a time, he reached the top and rushed through the kitchen, chambering around, afraid of what he would find on the balcony. Before he lost his nerve, he kicked open the door and took aim. He lowered the gun when he realized the three idiots were cheering. Billy held a bow, a quiver of arrows rested at his feet.
He got him, Taylor shouted. He got that motherfucker.
Right in the goddamned eye, Billy said with his voice full of giddy pride.
Martin smiled and clapped Billy on the back.
One heck of a shot, this guy.
Another flash of lightning.
Del looked beyond the balcony and spotted the lurker lying flat on its back, the blue bolt of an arrow pointing toward the sky. He turned to the three men.
Why? Why'd you do that? I told you to leave them be.
He was coming for the house, Taylor said defensively.
Del didn't want to admit it, but the lurker was only 15 yards from the house, its body illuminated by the light from the window of the back door.
You still shouldn't have done that.
Thunder rocked the house and the skies opened, doubling the deluge. A muddy stream lapped at the dead lurker's webbed foot. If the storm didn't let up, there'd be flooding in the house within minutes.
Another one!
Taylor shouted, pointing just beyond the slain creature. Del followed the direction of Taylor's trembling hand, straining to see through the sheet of pounding rain. A shapeless yellow figure was emerging from the roaring river, extending an arm toward its dead brethren. Billy knocked an arrow and told Taylor to get out of his way. Taylor did, and Billy took aim. Before Billy could shoot, Del grabbed hold of the arrow.
Don't do it! Look at it!
Billy yelled. His arms trembled as he tried to keep the bow taut.
Let me shoot!
With his hand on the arrow, half expecting it to fly and rip the skin off his palm, Del glanced over the railing. The creature knelt in the muck next to its dead friend. It looked from the arrow to the balcony. Its expressionless eyes studied each of them. Then it lifted its head to the sky, and a horrifying howl pierced the night, louder than the pounding rain and thunder.
God damn it, let me shoot it!
Billy screamed, and Taylor and Martin both shouted for Del to let go of the arrow. Although he held the gun and could call the shots if he desired, Del wasn't ready for that responsibility. He'd been taught to leave the lurkers alone. But what if that was wrong? And they'd already shot one. This wasn't up to him anymore. They were all grown men. All he could do was tell them what he knew. A loud, sucking pop, like the top being pulled off a can of tuna, drew their attention down below. The lurker held the arrow in his hand, a slimy black mass trailing from the tip. The body from which the arrow had been pulled began to deflate, large pieces of its mottled skin sloughing off and dissolving in the rising water that had already reached its chest.
Jesus fucking Christ,
Taylor said, looking like he might lose the fruity contents in his stomach. Del let go of the arrow and turned toward the kitchen. A loud twang sliced through the air, followed by a series of cheers and high fives. The weight of the gun was reassuring, but for the first time in his 10 years of owning it, he wasn't comfortable with only 15 rounds in the magazine. He wished to God he'd brought along his extra boxes of ammo that were collecting dust back home. Del knew they probably wouldn't listen, but he shouted anyway.
Everyone get inside!
Only Billy responded, and it wasn't polite, so Del continued toward his room. As he passed the fridge, Taylor yelled,
There's another one! There, too!
Martin shouted. Billy said,
I see four of them!
Lurkers weren't supposed to travel in packs, according to everything Del had heard. Some even claimed there weren't but one or two that existed. Del ran for the near wall and flipped the switches, turning on the floodlights. When he made it to the balcony, he counted six of the disgustingly strange beasts. They were sloshing through the river toward the dissolving heap of yellow by the back door. The other three were already on the driveway.
The Escalade, fuck no!
Billy shrieked, knocking an arrow and taking aim. He released the arrow and it zipped past the nearest lurker and punctured the driver's door.
They're too far away, Taylor said. Get the ones near the house.
Martin agreed and told Billy to get the ones closest to the back door. Billy turned to Del.
I'll take care of these. Get the ones out there.
A series of thuds came from the driveway. Though not appearing very solid, the lurkers packed a punch. In a matter of seconds, the Escalade was crumpled.
"That's a $75,000 vehicle, you motherfuckers," Billy cried, and shot one straight through the neck.
"It's already ruined. You've got insurance," Taylor reminded him.
Billy was out of arrows.
"Give me your gun," he said to Dell.
Dell shook his head. The sound of smashing glass and crunching metal mixed with the roaring river.
"Come on, you pussy," Billy said. "If you're not going to use the gun, give it to me.
I'll shoot them if they come in the house. We don't need to piss them off any more than we already have."
Another deafening howl tore through the night. Billy said,
"They're taunting us."
"Let them." Dell turned his back on the group. "I suggest you guys get inside."
"Fuck you," Billy said, and started charging.
Dell spun toward Billy and shoved the barrel of the .357 at Billy's head.
"Come at me again, and I'll put a bullet between your eyes, you son of a bitch."
Billy glared at Dell, but the Glock's barrel must have been too intimidating because he finally stepped back. Still aiming at Billy's forehead, tempted to pull the trigger, Dell said,
"Do what you want, but you're not touching this gun."
Dell spotted a quiver in the corner. So did Billy, but he kept eye contact with Dell.
"I'm not scared of them. Not like you."
"Yeah, and I'm not drunk or stupid like you," Dell said.
Billy brushed past Dell, grabbed an arrow, and ran for the front door. The guy was as dumb as anyone Dell had ever met. Once Dell heard the door open and close, he returned his attention to the back, where the lurkers were still reducing the Escalade to a hunk of scrap metal.
"Hurry up, Dell," Taylor urged, peering over the railing. "They're right below us."
"Back up and be quiet, both of you." From the look on Martin's face, it was obvious that Martin didn't like being told what to do. So Dell added, "Trust me on this." Martin nodded and stepped away from the railing, just as a shrill twang came from the driveway. The lurker who'd been caving in the rear of the Cadillac fell to its knees, the blue tip of the arrow sticking out of the back of its head. Billy rushed onto the scene, grabbed a stray arrow off the ground. With the bow stretched to its limit and an arrow ready to fly, he swiveled towards the lurker on the passenger side and let the arrow loose. It missed its target and glanced off the demolished vehicle. Billy looked around for another arrow. With the unnatural speed of a tsunami, the lurkers hurtled toward Billy from the other side. Before he could do so much as scream, the lurkers were lying on top of him, one ripping through his stomach, throwing heaps of intestines over his shoulder, while one clamped its massive jaws on Billy's face and began tearing out chunks. Taylor was yelling something at Dell when an enormous crash shook the balcony. Dell glanced over the railing, but he didn't see any of the creatures, only the water lapping at the house.
"What in hell was that?"
Martin asked, his voice shaking worse than the balcony had. "The door, I think."
"You think?"
Taylor yelled. Before Dell could tell him to back away, Taylor was on his hands and knees, his head between the posts of railing peering over the edge.
"Holy shit. They knocked down the goddamn door. They're inside."
"Come on," Dell said, as he watched the two lurkers in the driveway get up from their victim, leaving an unrecognizable mess where Billy had been only a few moments before. Both of them staggered toward the Escalade, grabbed hold of the rear bumper, and heaved the SUV off into the brush. Dell felt a sense of helplessness at their inhuman strength. Taylor followed Dell's gaze in time to see the Escalade crash onto its roof, its momentum rolling it into the river.
"They're damming it."
Martin's eyes grew wider.
"What do you mean, damn?"
"Taylor, get away from the railing," Dell ordered. "Both of you, follow me. Come on." Suddenly, a purple tongue the width of Dell's wrist, and God knew how long, shot through the air, wrapped around Taylor's neck, and started to pull him through the railing.
Dell yelled for Martin to grab Taylor's feet as he ran to the railing and stuck the .357's barrel against the beast's tongue. Taylor gurgled as he tried to pull away from the tongue with the gun just inches from his face. Realizing he had to risk damaging Taylor's hearing in order to save his life, Dell pulled the trigger. The tongue blew apart, spattering the side of Taylor's face. Martin yanked Taylor back and helped him tear at the dissolving tissue still wrapped around his neck, clumps plopping on the ground. Dell held the kitchen door open for them. "Inside, now!" This time there was no hesitation. Martin brushed by Dell. Taylor cried out. He had been right behind Martin, but now he was reeling backward. One grotesque tongue gripping his left ankle, another latched onto his right bicep. Dell reached for Taylor's outstretched hand, but he wasn't fast enough. Dell heard a sickening snap as Taylor's lower back smashed into the railing, the agony on his face indicating that it was his back that had broken, not the wooden railing. Martin stayed pressed against the wall at the back of the balcony as Dell ran to the railing, aiming with his right hand, trying to pull Taylor back with his left. There were five lurkers below. Two were yanking with their tongues, while the others waited patiently. The lurkers were using Taylor to help pull themselves up. Just as Dell was about to fire at one latched onto Taylor's ankle, the creature next to it let its own tongue fly. Dell swiveled and fired two rounds, both bullets striking the lurker's spongy forehead. At the same instant, the meaty tongue slapped Dell's forearm and then fell to the floor. Dell turned back to his original target and fired two more rounds. The creature fell backward, losing its control on Taylor's leg. Neither Dell nor Taylor was prepared for the sudden release of tension. Taylor fell forward, his face bouncing off the floor. Dell lost his grip, and Taylor was whipped off the balcony, his scream silenced abruptly when he splashed into the rising water below. Pulling the trigger as fast as he could, Dell killed the lurker that had pulled Taylor down, as well as the one whose teeth were buried in Taylor's neck. But before he could shoot the third, an explosion rocked the house. The indoor lights went out all at once, leaving the floodlights as the only thing between them and complete darkness. The black seemed to amplify the smacking, slurping, and snarling down below. Dell backed away from the railing until he bumped into Martin, shaking against the door. He stepped back into the pitch-black kitchen, bringing Martin with him and closing the door behind them.
"I don't want to be here."
"The circuit breaker is down there. They took it out."
"We need to go away from here."
Dell was just as scared as Martin, but he didn't like hearing the panic in his boss's voice. "You want to try running out the front door? I don't."
"My Porsche. It's in the garage."
Dell looked around at the dark room, unable to see past the kitchen's center island. Even if the lurkers haven't gotten into the garage, the water sure as hell has. The car probably won't start.
"We try."
Dell waited for a crash of thunder to finish before he told Martin to go right ahead and try to reach his car.
"We stick together?"
"Yeah," Dell said. He sniffed the air. Something was burning.
"So we go to the garage?"
"I didn't say that."
"Okay. I'll take the gun."
"Hell no," Dell said, having a difficult time hearing anything over the pounding rain. Martin held out his hand.
"Dell, give me the gun."
"I'm going upstairs. You can follow me if you want." Martin grabbed his arm.
"Hand over gun and I'll give you a raise."
Dell shook his head at the man's absurdity. "Find the flashlight. It's in one of those drawers by the sink. And hurry up," Dell said, aiming the .357 at the kitchen doorway, even though he could barely see past the tip of his gun's fluorescent front sight. Martin opened a drawer.
"I double your pay."
"Shut up," Dell said. He listened. He thought he heard footsteps. A wave of smoke washed over him, stinging his eyes. "Hurry up. I think it's the one closest to me." One drawer slid shut and another opened.
"Here it is,"
Martin said as he clicked the light on.
Dell's heart caught in his throat as the lurker's bloated face appeared less than 2 yards in front of him. He pulled the trigger 3 times, erasing its twisted smile. Martin gasped, and the flashlight clattered to the floor, its beam shooting past Dell's feet. He spun toward Martin, taking aim at the lurker holding his boss. The monster's arm covered the man's entire face. Before Dell could get off a shot, he heard the sound of a tongue being launched from the far corner. Dell ducked, crawled around the island. A cabinet door shattered. Dell fired 3 rounds where he thought the lurker was. It sounded as if 2 bodies fell to the floor. One was definitely Martin. Dell heard his gurgled plea for help. Aware that there was at least 1 more lurker in the room, Dell bent over and picked up the flashlight. He brought it up and spun in a circle. A gang of yellow creatures surrounded him, and 12 yellow-black eyes glistened in the dim light. Dell had 3 rounds left in the Glock. Not enough to kill them all.